You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast, the longest running weekly cricket podcast in Australia. I'm your host, Menners. I'm joined, as ever, by Paul Dennett. Paul, how are you?
G'day. Good, Menners. G'day, everyone.
And we've got a special guest. We've got Dan Liebke, co-host of the Can't Bowl, Can't Throw podcast, and also author of the 10 Greatest World Cup Wins in Australian Cricket, a new book that's out. Fantastic. We're going to talk about it later. There's one passage in this, Dan, that I think may be in like the top three bits of literature I've ever read. Welcome back to the show.
Right up there with Tolstoy.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks, guys.
Great to have you on, taking a break from Cat tonight to record with us. So we have lots to talk about. Obviously, we're well into – he's brought the dog in. So for those watching on YouTube, Dan's got the dog. And for those listening, if you hear like barks and, you know, slobbering, it won't be Dan. It'll be his dog. It's not Paul or Jaleesa as usual. So anyway, we've got lots of news tonight. The test summer is underway. The Big Bash kicks off next week. England are going crazy. They're changing cricket, which is concerning. And just before we recorded, a bombshell has dropped that the appeal, you know, David Warner's captaincy aspirations are over now. He's withdrawn from the process, and it's got quite ugly between Warner and Cricket Australia. So we'll get into that. But first, this episode of Cricket Unfiltered is brought to you by NordVPN, and it's the perfect time for them to sponsor us because we're coming onto holiday season. So you might be traveling and you want to keep up with your favorite shows or watch the sport back in Australia. So you can use a VPN to use all your apps and watch your local programming. So, you know, if something's geo-blocked, you can use the VPN to get around it when you're on holiday. So it's a great time to sign up to the great offer we've got.
Absolutely. And the usage of it on holidays and overseas is something that I'm especially fond of. In 2012, I had to watch the State of Origin in a pub in Prague and actually meet people. If I was there now with the VPN, I'd be able to watch it in the comfort of my hotel room with the VPN. So NordVPN, Menners, where can they access it?
Yeah, so grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, and you get 4 months for free, and it's also completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So that's nordvpn.com/cricketunfiltered. All right, let's get into the cricket headlines brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. And as we record this, we're on the eve of the Adelaide day-night test, and it has been confirmed that Australia's occasional captain, Pat Cummins, is sitting out the Adelaide test. And surprisingly, Josh Hazlewood hasn't been given the captaincy. They've gone for Steve Smith, so he will captain, and Scott Boland comes in to replace Pat Cummins with the ball. So Nisa and Lance Morris, who were brought into the squad, aren't playing. Dan, what do you think?
I mean, obviously, I think Scott Boland's the man who deserved to get the role. I don't have any problem with that. I don't have any problem with Smith captaining either. I mean, he did it last year. I don't know what Cummins has against Adelaide, but he seems determined to never play there again. So, yeah, Smith as captain, Boland in. I don't think any of that's too hard to understand.
Paul, you happy with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's working well. And I'm really delighted that Boland's getting his opportunity again as well. It's, you know, on the face of it, to be dropped after the extraordinary couple of test matches that he had, for those that say, you know, it's a batter's game, there's some truth to that. Because if a batter had done the equivalent of what he did, which is basically what, a couple of double centuries in a row, there'd be no way in hell that they'd be dropped. Yet he was omitted with good reason because of the tours that were of the subcontinent, not necessarily favouring the quicks, but he probably could have felt a bit aggrieved not to get a game in the first test. So I'm really pleased. I was on the phone to my dad last night, and for fun, we were going back through every first-class match he'd played between the last test match and now. And it was really heartening to see just how good his figures were. We didn't actually do the maths, but I think his average would be under 20 in first-class cricket in that time. So his good form has really continued, and it's really exciting to see him get another chance.
The West Indies haven't named their team yet, but they've got a lot of players battling injury. Kemar Roach has a hamstring concern. Young quick bowler Jaden Seals has a knee injury. A number three bat, Bonner, had to be subbed out of the last game with concussion. So they haven't named a team yet. It seems like Anderson Phillips, who was the spare quick, will play. They also flew over Marquino Mindley, and he might play if all these injuries force out Roach and Seals. Do either of you give the West Indies a chance in this test match?
They're always a chance, but you wouldn't think. I mean, it's Adelaide. It's I can't imagine Smith and Labuschagne slowing down with their run scoring. So I think it'd be quite the upset if the West Indies won. But yeah, you're always a chance, right?
Yeah, I agree. And probably the fact that it's a day-night test, it does bring them slightly more into it, because even though Australia's record in day-night test matches is fantastic, strange things can happen. And I suppose if the West Indies end up getting the ball in one of those sessions where it seems it's not always the night session, wasn't the night session when Australia rolled India for 36 a couple of years ago, that crazy things can happen. And you know, they have the bones of a good pace attack. We talked about it before the first test. They were really disappointing with the ball, but I'm hoping that Anderson Phillip gets a run. He's got a phenomenal, albeit brief, first-class record. I was looking up Mindley just now, Menas, and his overall record is very handy. He's taken 100 and – where has he gone now? Sorry. He's taken 103 wickets at 24.3 in first-class cricket, and he's put together a pretty good couple of seasons in the last few seasons that he's had. He's had plenty of wickets and at lower averages even than that. So he'd certainly be – you wonder why he's not actually in the initial squad.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing the West Indies bat first and get some runs on the board. And then, as you say, if they get the ball in the right conditions, maybe they can knock our top order over, and then you never know.
Yeah, it's probably their best chance of winning, right? Because I was very impressed with young Chanderpaul. He did well in the first test. Chanderpaul and Brathwaite, you know, you never know. They get away. They could set a decent first innings total.
Absolutely. Dan Brettig from the Age and the Sydney Morning Herald wrote a really pleasing article, and he's reporting that inside Cricket Australia, they're looking at test match ticket prices. And, you know, they're obviously noticeably low crowds to start the summer. And, you know, I think Cricket Australia are concerned, and he's reporting that they're looking at, you know, really dropping the prices to encourage more people to go to test cricket, which I just think would is obviously makes so much sense because, you know, Paul and I have talked many times that it's a lot of money to go to a day of test cricket and sit in a decent spot. So I actually think this is long overdue.
The problem is that you look at the article that you've cut in here and it's that they're talking about a major cut in international match ticket prices outside school holidays. So that's where, I mean, that's great. So it would have applied to this the test match just gone, but I still think that it needs to be cut across the board. I know that Sydney and Melbourne get good crowds, but as we've said many times on this show, the Sydney ticket prices for test cricket are just utterly ridiculous and they're indefensible. And they'll say, oh yeah, but we've got some cheap seats that are $50. And yeah, as I've said many times, you sit in the O'Reilly concourse for 7 hours and if it's a warm day, you're absolutely destroyed by the end of it. You need to sit in the more expensive seats to make it a day that's worthwhile, and then they're just ridiculously expensive. You know, getting closer to $200 than $100 sometimes these days.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the article, I mean, there was even the suggestion that you know that there may even be free tickets at some point. I actually don't mind the idea of having some of these stands free, like. It's supply and demand. If people aren't coming at whatever price you're charging, then you know, it's basic economics. You make it free, so they entice people in. I don't think you make the entire stadium free, but if you make a few stands free, let them come in. And so if they fill it up, that's can't be a bad thing, right?
Yeah, and one of the big things these days is that they don't make their money or very much money.
Sales.
And in many ways, the reason you want a big crowd at the game is because it then becomes a better television product. And I've experienced it myself that I remember when Sheffield Shield was first ever broadcast on TV back in the old days of Optus Vision, I thought, oh, this would be awesome. And I kind of found it hard to watch because there's absolutely no one there. You just felt, oh, it's just lacking in something. But if they can get lose a little bit of money to get bigger crowds in, they'll probably get it paid back more in TV rights deals in years to come.
And it's just overpriced. I'm sorry. Yeah, but in today's, exactly. I mean, that's just the simple facts. And, you know, in that article, they say studies are pointing to the fact that people are being priced out of the market. So, I'm glad they're looking at that. I hope they make big changes. All right. So big news has just broken just before we record this. And Pete Lawler writes in the News Corp papers, an angry David Warner has given up on attempts to overturn his leadership ban amid what appears to be a chaotic and dysfunctional process instated by Cricket Australia. Warner alleges that counsel assisting the independent panel assembled for the hearing had made offensive comments in the process. The batsman says he does not want to put his family through another public humiliation and was conscious of the effect it would have on the team. And David Warner's released like a 5-page social media statement going into the details of why he's not pursuing overturning his captaincy ban. And I mean, this is just a absolute shambles from Cricket Australia. It's been farcical from go to woe. And and it's just ending in the worst possible way where, you know, David Warner's clearly peeved off.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, obviously, they. I think in retrospect, and even at the time, some of us were arguing that they overreacted 5 years ago. And I just don't get why they're even bothering with all this mucking about. Just say, look, we made a mistake. 5 years is plenty. 5 years is a long time. Let him captain. Let him at least be eligible for captaincy. I mean, they're not saying we're going to make him captain. It's just. Make him eligible. God, if they really cared that much, say he's eligible and then just, you know, have a quiet word with the selectors and say never select him.
Exactly. That's the bizarre thing that, I mean, I personally agree that they went too far initially and that I think it's more than time that he should be considered for leadership positions. But I understand those who would say, no, he shouldn't be considered for leadership. I respect that position. What I don't understand is for them to not be able to make a decision. They've spent months now making a decision as to whether they're going to make a decision or not. And it's just, it surely should be very, very simple to either say, sorry, David, we're sticking with the original ban. Bad luck. Or we've decided, it was a bit too harsh. We're allowing you back in. And as you said, Dan, doesn't mean he's suddenly captain of Australia tomorrow. What it would mean, he would have been captain of the Sydney Thunder, competition that was crying out for that level of profile. Mm. Plus, surely there's some self-interest there that David Warner is a very, very important and senior figure in Australian cricket. You want him to like Cricket Australia and to want to do the right thing. You know, what's to stop him now? I mean, if I was him now, I'd be saying, right, take me to the nearest T5 league on the moon, and I'm going. I'm gone. I'm out of here. I've got no loyalty left for Cricket Australia. And this is not to say that what he did back then is commendable or excusable. It was a really bad thing. But you know, time has passed, and the way that they have handled it, it's farcical and it's not hard. That's what I don't get. You could have taken a person who's never understood anything about cricket, given them a one-page summary of what had occurred, and they could have made a decision in 5 minutes. So why can't Cricket Australia?
Yeah, and part of Warner's release seems to be that they actually wanted to make it sort of another, almost a public trial. And Warner writes, in effect, counsel assisting, and it appears to some extent the review panel want to conduct a public trial of me and what occurred during the third test at Newlands. And he goes on to say that he doesn't want to be a washing machine for cricket's dirty laundry. My family is more important to me than cricket. Now, that just seems to me so bloody stupid. Why would Cricket Australia want to relitigate bloody Sandpapergate again? Are they so moronic that they can't just, as you said, just go, yep, tick the box, let's move on. He can be captain of the Sydney Thunder. And they actually wanted to go over the details. So then Hazelwood, Stark, Cummins, they all get implicated.
Why have they got even counsel assisting? Are they playing at grown-ups here? Are they if they're having some sort of cosplay about being in court and lawyers? Is it like
wearing wigs?
Yeah, they probably were. Why do they need to have counsel assisting to decide whether they can decide whether or not David Warner could one day be captain again? God, it's just, it's like, I'm baffled by it. Now, obviously, we're only getting his side of the story. Maybe they have a slightly different side. But even the fact that the term counsel assisting is presumably legit, just to me, it's just bonkers.
Before we move on from that, though, I want to hear more about this T5 league on the moon. Obviously, they need bigger boundaries there, right? Lower gravity.
1/6 gravity, yeah. It's
it just seems like Cricket Australia can't get out of their own way at the moment. They sort of roll from one disaster to the other. All right. So, speaking of which, the Big Bash starts next week. I was at the launch in Sydney on Monday. A lot of the players were there taking catches, and I featured an interview with Alistair Dobson, the general manager, and I asked for a job on the Big Bash Advisory Committee. So let's see how that goes. And I complained to him about the power surge. He took it in good spirits, but I don't think he's abolishing it as I wished. And I also spoke to Sam Billings at the launch. He's a really terrific guy. It's so annoying how likable this crop of English players are. I don't like it.
That's all right. It'll pass.
Josh Philippi was rocking the worst haircut in cricket, so keep an eye out for that one. Peter Siddle's got the blue sunnies back. There's been quite a bit of news in the Big Bash. So it starts next Tuesday in Canberra. Mitch Marsh has been ruled out, but we get Faf du Plessis for a few games over in Perth. Adam Zampa has been named the Stars skipper, and Jason Sanger the Thunder skipper because Warner's not allowed. Are you too excited about the Big Bash?
I'll be more excited in a week, I think, or maybe 2 weeks. It usually takes a while to build my enthusiasm for it. It just, I don't pay any attention to it. Then all of a sudden it's on my TV and it's like, this is quite good. I don't mind just turning it on and having it in the background and not really caring who wins any match. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it in a similar sort of calm, not overly looking forward to it sort of way, but I intend to have it on all the time. It's strange, that sort of thing, that because not every game is on free-to-air, that for some reason that matters. Even though I've got access to KO, it's just a little bit harder to flick it on and everything else. And I yearn for the days back when it was on just every night, Channel 10, and it was nice and familiar and nice and repetitive. I understand why they have a sort of a soft launch, because it's really after Christmas that it gets going. But in some ways, you know, launching it at Canberra, it'll be probably a half-filled small stadium. I wish they could some, you know, maybe they should start it with a Sydney-Melbourne derby at the SCG and have really promoted the hell out of it, so it starts with a bit of a bang rather than a whimper.
It's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. You know, you're starting out at Marnica Roval. It's not exactly, you know, one of the major grounds. There seems to be moves, and it's reported in the News Corp papers, that they're looking at trying to get Steve Smith into the Big Bash. There seemed to be some issue with the fact that David Warner was being paid extra to come and play, but a superstar like Steve Smith wasn't getting offered the same deal. But it seems like they're trying to make something work. And, I mean, obviously, it makes sense. I mean, Smith should be playing in the BBL, and he should be actually on a marketing deal, because whether you think he's a top T20 player or not, little kids will go to a Sixers game to see him play.
Yeah. Is this related to why he wasn't allowed to play in the final last year? I've completely forgotten what the issue for why he wasn't playing in the final last year was.
No, it's unrelated. Now it's a different issue altogether.
Good. Okay, that's good.
That hasn't carried over. But, yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of issues now. Like, the Sydney Sixers now have a full roster, so there's talk maybe when James Vince goes after his games with the Sixers, then maybe he could slot in there. But how would you pay him? So there's issues to get around, but they just have to make it happen. Like, just make it happen.
I think, Dan, what actually happened was that the guy who came up with that rule for Steve Smith not being allowed last year has subsequently been moved into the David Warner decision organizer.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
He's the council assisting.
Yeah.
That guy. Look, you know, I love the Big Bash, but my overriding feeling going into the competition is one of uncertainty. And my concerns are that there are a lot of stars coming, but most of them seem to be only coming for the beginning of the competition, which is great, not great, because, you know, as the competition really gets to the climax, they won't be there, obviously. But also, I think it's like confusing if you're watching at home and you see, say, Faf du Plessis playing for the Scorchers, and then you'll go to a game a week later and he's not there, and they're like, oh no, yeah, he was only playing for the first five games and now he's playing in the UAE. Then, you know, I don't think that's great. I also, I'm worried about low crowds, you know, because if it starts off slow, then I think it could, you know, it could just bubble along where people aren't sort of incentivized to go, because I don't think it's going to have a good atmosphere. And also, I think, you know, Channel 7's Big Bash coverage is not very good. And, you know, I think that's affecting the products. I'm worried about that. So, yeah, I'm concerned. I hope it does well, but I'm very concerned.
Channel 7 still seemed to me like, I was reading some story on TikTok the other day about some guy who used to leave work 5 minutes early occasionally, even though on other days he'd stay back for 4 hours, and his boss came and said, you must stay till five every night. And he said, okay, I will stay till five every night, but I'll never stay a minute past five. And how you like this? I'm going to work to rule. I sort of feel like Channel 7 are saying, right, we will do everything we're obliged to do, but we're not all that happy about it. We're counting the days till the contract ends. And, you know, their coverage is absolutely fine, but I don't know that it's the same level as if they were I said it last week, but that point that they cut straight away from the cricket as quickly as they could and went to Sydney Weekender. And I didn't mention it, but I don't watch a lot of Aussie rules, but I watched a couple of games during the season on Channel 7. Game finished, went and put my daughter to bed, read her a story, did a few other things, came back, and they're still analysing the game at about 1 a.m. You know, in the players' rooms and doing all these sorts of things. So I think that's where we need a new broadcast deal where someone just absolutely loves the hell out of the Big Bash like Channel 10 used to.
Yeah, or maybe Channel 10 will get the rights back, hopefully.
Be good for Jaleesa. All right, so that's the Big Bash starts on Tuesday. Now, this week, Pakistan and England played a pretty good test match. You know, it wasn't bad. England won in Rawalpindi, so they're 1-0 up in the series. I've got a couple of my favourite stats from the test match. It's the first test to produce a result despite both teams having a 550-plus total. All the previous 15 test matches ended in a draw. So I think that's pretty incredible. And Pakistan scored 847 runs in the match and still lost, which is the second most for any team in a defeat. England's 861 runs against Australia in 1948 was the number one. So
was that at Headingley? Was that at Leeds?
Yep.
That's Bradman's second last test where he got 173 and not out. It was a great game.
So, yeah, I mean, astonishing test match. You know, started off when England scored 500 on the first day off 75 overs.
Yeah,
I don't know what to say about it. I mean, good on them.
I just thought it was amazing. The amount of effort that they had to put in to get a result, like they had to score at this unprecedented rate, make a generous declaration, scramble their way to wickets. They knew they were going to lose overs every evening. And after all that, like they still only won with about 10 minutes to spare, which is incredibly impressive. But I'm not sure I could be bothered putting in that much work for a test win. I mean, especially if you just got out of your sick bed, which most of them had, like just take it easy, guys. Wait for an easier pitch.
Manners, I think that your sort of lukewarm reception of it is pretty diabolical. I think that, you know how when someone dies, they have, instead of sometimes a minute's silence, they should have a minute's applause. I think they should have a minute's applause for Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes, even though they're still alive. I think this is one of the best things I've ever seen. I love it so much. They turn up, the most boring looking pitch ever. And had they played the way that every cricketer has played for 150 years, this game would have ended on day five with both teams having scored 600 and that would be it. The fact that they went out there and, as Dan said, went beyond the level of what a normal person should do to get a result, and even at the end declared and basically almost gifted Pakistan the game, I just think that there should be something like every cricket fan should be required to send them both $100 in the mail or something. Like, I think it's the one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And I would, Menas, I think you should put aside your partisan sort of hatred of the English and just acknowledge this is possibly the best thing to happen to test cricket ever.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm being sarcastic when I play it down. I mean, we're in, unfortunately, golden period for English cricket because, I mean, it started in their summer with those incredible run chases that, you know, the likes of which we're just not used to seeing in Test cricket that, you know, and then, you know, they've won the T20 World Cup and now they're, you know, producing a Test match performance like that. It's quite incredible and it is breathtaking. And, you know, Damien Fleming made a good point about, you know, like, it's if you want to be a really good team, sometimes you've got to kind of push the boundaries and do it differently. And you know, they've sort of thrown the rule book out the window. You know, when I was asking Sam Billings about it the other day, he was saying, you know, they really want to entertain and bring people back to Test cricket. So I mean, it's a noble concept, it's a noble cause. You know, I look forward to them trying to do it to Stark, Hazelwood and Cummins next year in England.
How good is the Ashes going to be, though?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Like if Smith's back in form, as everyone's telling us he is with this new technique of his, imagine peak Smith up against, you know, England trying to baz ball. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for the Ashes next year. I mean, I will, but I don't want to.
I think it's great that they won. It would have been so disappointing had Pakistan won and then there was like the message of don't try anything new. And, you know, it's great when something noble also has the pragmatic result. So, but Pakistan, what are they doing? I mean, Ramiz Raja said that they're a few years away from being able to produce good test cricket pitches because they had so many years without test cricket. And the point is, but you've still had cricket there. You've had first-class cricket. That's a pretty poor excuse. And I remember saying during the Australia-Pakistan series, I loved everything about that series, the crowds, the cricket being back in Pakistan, everything except for the pitches. And that this is, you know, this has continued and they should be penalised for that. I don't understand people saying, oh, well, you can't criticise the pitch too much because it produced a million runs and a result. And no, it produced those runs because of Sir Ben Stokes and Sir Brendan McCullum. It's, you know, not any credit should be given to the pitch whatsoever. They should be docked points off the World Test Championship for producing such a terrible pitch. And they should own up to it. You know, there's no shame in owning up to the fact that it was a shocker and they keep on producing shockers. And how can anyone expect to be watching Test cricket in Pakistan if it's played in the normal way, if they keep on producing pitches like that?
There were some incredible stats about, you know, how many tests England have played in Pakistan, and you know, most of them have ended in a draw. I mean, most of them were what we saw when Australia went there, those batathons. I've got a question for you both. You know, should Australia try and play a bit of this aggressive brand of cricket that England are? You know, should we try and take them on next summer, or should we actually just play our game?
I don't think Australia should change it. Australia have had just as much success since Cummins took over as England have had since Stokes took over. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens when the two collide. So I mean, Cummins hasn't lost a test series yet. So, they had the draw in Sri Lanka, but he still hasn't lost one. So don't fix it.
Yeah, I think Australia's doing really well. I think that they probably are playing a little bit more aggressively than they used to in the very recent times as well. That I've always sort of rejected the notion of, oh, you've got to go out there and test cricket and put all your shots away and everyone's got to play like Pujara. And I think generally that's the wrong way to play, that you get the exceptions like Pujara and Boycott, but more often than not, if someone plays with a bit more aggression, then they tend to do better. So I think sometimes Australia can be a little bit too defensive. So maybe they could take a leaf out of the book a little bit, but by and large, I think their approach is pretty good.
I mean, you don't want Smith and Labuschagne to decide that 2.5 or 3 runs an over, whatever they usually score at, too slow and, you know, stop scoring runs. They're doing okay.
Might be a good approach for Warner to take on English wickets to start out there and bashing it around rather than poking
before Broad gets to him.
Exactly. All right, so that's the great England cricket team. They continue to roll on. Wonderful. All right, so speaking of successful cricket teams, the Australian women's team is in India at the moment for a 5-match T20 series. It starts on Friday. A couple of good stories. I touched on Phoebe Litchfield getting a call up, but also former Ireland international Kim Garth getting a call up. It's a great story. You know, left Ireland because she wanted to be a full-time cricketer in Australia, and she's been here for a few years, qualified for Australia, and now picked in Australia's national team. I mean, that's a really tough road, leaving a country and coming to try and break into the Australian cricket team, women's cricket team. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how she does, and I'm looking forward to that series in India.
Yeah, it's not at a great time though, is it?
On delay
is the way to watch that one. But yeah, I said on the latest podcast I did with Kat that it's crazy for Garth to try to decide to break into this team. That seems like the craziest idea in the world, but she's done it, so good on her.
It's a pity that the games have to be at such an obscure hour. If they could be on it at a normal time, this would be the sort of thing where I would love – it wouldn't have happened, but – a free-to-air broadcaster should have picked this up. If it was on, if it was going to be on, say at 8 prime time in Australia rather than whatever the T20 times are on, I reckon this would have raided the house down on a free-to-air broadcaster. And it's annoying to me that they would never in a million years have even contemplated getting it. I think that's something that the BCCI and Cricket Australia should look to do, to sort of say in future for series like this, let's throw out the normal rule book and actually try to get it on free to air, and if we have to squander lose a bit of money in order to do so, let's do so.
Yeah, I really hope that when there's a new TV deal, there's more options for that, because I don't understand. There's more channels than ever. Like, you know,
exactly.
They've all got their second channel and the streaming services. Like, you should be able to get it on free to air on one of those channels. So, yeah, totally agree with you. All right, now, so the Big Bash starts next week, and, you know, those avid followers of Australian domestic cricket, I know Dan is one of them, the beloved Sheffield Shield and Marsh Cup go on a break now. So just before the break, the New South Wales coach, Phil Jakes, was sacked after some pretty poor performances from New South Wales this year and quite poor performances last year. So no real surprises there, Paul?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I'll be at the next match with a Justice for Jake's banner, which I'll be holding up proudly. And
was there really Justice for JL banners at the Optus Stadium?
Yeah, they were confiscated. It's very funny.
They were confiscated?
Yeah, it's like Qatar's running it now.
God, that's ridiculous. I mean, I don't. I wouldn't go and hold a justice for jail batter up, as a but it's not offensive. God, you know, that's
no.
Do they really confiscate them?
Maybe it was stopping other people from seeing, but that's the only rational reason you could confiscate it.
If that's the case, but yeah, you know.
Phil Drakes has been sacked. Greg Shippard is going to take over until the end of the season for the New South Wales Blues. Shippard, of course, is the Sydney Sixers coach. At the break, Western Australia are on top of the Shield ladder with 4 wins from 6 matches. And then it's pretty tight. All teams are in contention for second spot. That's going to be an exciting finish when that kicks going in February 2023. And the Marsh Cup, WA are on top. South Australia second with 3 wins. South Australia have won 3 wins in a competition. That is some turnaround for Dizzy's team. I mean, I think they'd won 1 match in the last 2 seasons. So that's quite a phenomenal performance.
He's been reappointed as well, hasn't he?
Yes. Has he?
Yeah, I think so.
Justice for Dizzy.
Right. Justice for Dizzy. Tasmania are in 3rd position. That's the break. WA on top of both teams, both ladders, sorry. And a final bit of news. Shane Warne has been elevated to legend status in the Sport Australia Hall of Fame. He was brought in as a member in 2009, but now elevated to legend status. And, I don't think we needed that to happen to know that, but it's great that they've done it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much debate that Shane Warne was a legend. I think that's pretty clear cut.
Yes. Absolutely. Now, that's all the cricket headlines. Anything else you want to get into, guys, before Can't Let It Go?
One question for you both, getting your opinion on it. I see that Zampa is holding out hope of getting in the Australian Test Tour of India in February. He's got... obviously, a very much abbreviated first-class record because he plays just so much white ball cricket. But what do you guys feel about that? I mean, his first-class record, such as it is, he's got, an average of 48. I would normally say on that basis I wouldn't be interested in him, but I think maybe there's, I'm open to it. What do you guys think?
Look, I am open to it. I mean, he played for New South Wales in their latest Shield match and took a few wickets in the first innings. He hasn't played enough first-class cricket to really know where his game's at. But, if you think about his style on Indian pitches, he's a lot of top spin. So on those pitches where there's natural variation, his ability to target the stumps and, it could lead to mistakes. My thing is I think he's an easier bowler to sit on, like in one day cricket, they have to go after him. But I think in test cricket, he'd be easier to sit on. So that's the challenge for him. But I'm not against it.
Yeah, I'm not really against it either. I can't make the claim that Glenn Maxwell should get another chance at the test side without, based on his one day form or just general Glenn Maxwell-ness, without saying, Zampa should be given a shot as well. Give him a shot. What's it going
to
hurt?
You've come to the right spot here. I think that Maxwell should be captain, opening bowler, opening batter, and wicketkeeper in the test side.
Yeah.
And there's Todd Murphy, the Victorian spinner, is making a bit of a charge up the ranks. He seems to have overtaken a few people. So it will be interesting which spinners they take to India next year with, I guess, who's in contention, Zampa, Ash Agar, Mitchell Swepson, maybe Nathan Lyon will go. Who else? Who else could they take?
I'd be disappointed if they took Swepson. He didn't bowl terribly at all in Pakistan or in Sri Lanka. I've forgotten my tests are sort of piling onto each other, but I just don't think that he's going to threaten the Indian batters too much. Agar is the one for me that I think is going to be the most successful. But I'd be happy to have Agar, Lyon, and even a third spinner in the side if the pitches suit.
All right. Well, that's all the cricket headlines. We're going to get into Can't Let It Go. Before I do that, I just want to read this passage. So Dan's book, 10 Greatest World Cup Wins in Australian Cricket. So I really like this because reading this passage, no one outside Australia is going to be able to read this book. So, so this is the passage that I'm going to read whenever I'm feeling down. Australia is the only nation for which a book like this, counting down the 10 best wins in World Cups, could possibly be written. Of the other cricketing nations, England have amassed 7, blah, blah, blah. West Indies are next with 5. India have 5, including one shared with Sri Lanka. Nobody else has more than 3. In contrast, when work started on this book, Australia had just won their 19th tournament, the 2021 Men's T20 World Cup. And during the writing of this book, they notched up their 20th, the 2022 Women's ODI World Cup. Then it goes on to allude to the fact that we might win the T20 World Cup at home, which we didn't.
No.
But that's.
But we did win the Commonwealth Games, which I would have included if I had been slightly braver to write about a tournament that hadn't yet taken place.
So this is actually like a really good book for patriots out there that just want to feel good. you know, like if you've been a bit down after the Socceroos bundled out, this will certainly pick you back up.
It's time for a sequel now as well. You've got the sequel of, you know, Australia's worst 10 World Cup wins coming out after this.
That would actually be good. Yeah. Ranked 10 to 20 or 11 to 20. Yep.
That's a flex.
Yeah. Well, I do have a list of those ones that are not quite sure how many interesting words I can get out of those ones.
Was it hard for you to rank them, Dan? Did you take it seriously?
I always take them mostly seriously. I mean, it's a publishing endeavor, so you've got other factors involved. But I usually take the top ones pretty seriously, and the lower ones I fiddle around to make sure, you know, the book flows as nicely as possible. But yeah, I don't think it was too hard to rank them. I think that most of the obvious contenders are in the top, you know, handful of spots.
Can I have a guess at the top three, or is that has to be for people to buy the book only to find
it? No, it's been out for ages. If they haven't bought it, they're going to buy it.
All right. Well, if I was going to say, not what I think, but what I think that would be in the book, and I've got no idea, but I reckon it may be 87-50 overs men 3, 99-50 overs men 2, and the recent women's T20 at the MCG number 1.
Flip 2 and 1.
99 okay. World Cup is 1.
Yeah.
But what's great about this book? And I love that sort of period from 87 to, say, 2007, where, you know, Australia and the 50-over World Cup had this beautiful romance, you know, where we won four of them in that period. Great book. Thoroughly recommend it.
Yeah, from 87 through to 2007, we were in the final of every World Cup or hosted it. So we're in the
yes. Yeah, that's true.
Of the men's, I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean the other kind of interesting stat that I kind of uncovered as I was working through this, and obviously as we alluded to, the book includes the Women's World Cup as well. So from when Australia won their first Women's World Cup to now, there's only been 3 years where Australia hasn't held a trophy of some description, either the men or the women. So that's just kind of this phenomenal record of there's always at least some trophy in the cabinet. And, of course, the women are helping now. They've got all of them. So we're completely safe while they're doing that.
Yeah, England win a couple of the things and it goes to their head. Dan Liebke is a comedy writer who was a regular contributor for Mad Magazine in Australia.
I was, yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that's where I got my start.
Yeah, very funny guy. So let's get into Can't Let It Go, that little bit of cricket news you just can't let go through to the keeper. Dan, you're our guest. What's yours?
I can't let go how incredibly entertaining this book, The 10 Greatest World Cup Wins in Australia. No. I can't let go how entertaining it is that Healy and McGrath are captain and vice captain over in India. It's like an alternate universe version of the men's team in the mid 1990s. I find that endlessly amusing. Do any of you guys know how often Ian Healy captained Australia
in the one day? Did he do it like in a one day game? Like
just in total. Yeah, I obviously didn't captain any tests.
Three games, T20s.
Two one days.
No, he actually captained 8 of them.
Wow.
Which is more than I would have expected. Do we think Alyssa Healy will overtake him on that score?
Definitely. Absolutely.
You reckon?
Yeah.
Yep.
She's probably going to pick up 5 here, right? And we don't even know whether, you know, when Laning will return, if she will return, and she maybe she don't even want You know, she won't even want to be captain when, if and when she does.
Yeah. So, you know, Talia McGrath and Glenn McGrath aren't related. You know that, don't you?
No, I know, I know that, but they've got the same name.
Just clearing that up.
The only other thing on that is it's so annoying now that Cummins is out. They should have made Stark captain. Imagine a married couple captaining Australia simultaneously. That would have been fantastic.
You never know with these the selectors, they might have.
Yeah.
Paul, what's your can't let it go?
All right, question for you guys. It's in England. It's in a test match, and you've got your 10 players, but you need one swing bowler, and you've got two choices: Jimmy Anderson or Terry Alderman from his prime. Who do you pick?
Jesus, you're in England.
I'm taking Anderson. Sorry. I mean, unless the opposition are all Graham Gooch, I'm taking Anderson.
No, I'm taking Alderman. I mean, if he was English, he'd probably have 800 Test wickets. So.
Yeah. So my point, you both demonstrated it nicely that it's not a clear cut necessary decision. I just found it annoying in a very low grade way that in Crick Info the other day they wrote an article about something and they just said Jimmy Anderson, comma, the greatest swing bowler of all time, comma, and they continued. I just think, he's absolutely wonderful. He's 40, he's going strong, he did well in this test match, he's a sublime bowler. But I just don't think that they can say bald-faced like that he's the greatest swing bowler of all time just because he's taken the most wickets. Because there was a time, as I've often said, that Alex Stewart, I think, was the most prolific run scorer for England. No one was saying he was the best batter that England's ever had. I presume Stephen Fleming's probably still the most prolific run scorer for New Zealand. No one's saying that. I don't know. Just annoys me. I can't let it go.
Yes. Well, good. I saw a great stat. So we were just like lauding Pat Cummins for his 200 test wickets at 21. And Jimmy Anderson, since the age of 35, has taken 192 test wickets at 21. That's incredible. I mean,
he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, the greatest swing bowler ever. I mean, what are you talking about, Paul? But yeah, I mean, I was blown away when I saw that because that's just like, I just never thought that was possible for even someone that bowls at his pace to play on at that level.
Well, even if he's not the greatest swing bowler of all time, he's certainly the greatest old swing bowler of all time, right? Based on those numbers.
Absolutely. You know, if you said to me Jimmy Anderson at 37, then definitely I'm picking him over Alderman. The thing is that I think that probably also illustrates maybe just how difficult it has been to bat in England in recent years, that the ball's been moving around everywhere. And look at the travails of David Warner, and he's not alone. But that's pretty impressive.
And that just makes Joe Root's efforts a couple of years ago even more impressive to score all those runs on tougher conditions.
Definitely.
And as well, Jimmy Anderson was immense on that last day at Rawalpindi on a pitch that was doing nothing for him. And they did show some footage of, I think this was on the back page, them rubbing the ball on Jack Leach's head. And Stuart Clark was on the panel. He made the point that wouldn't Jack Leach have sunscreen on his head to protect it from the sun? So you rub it on. The ball
I heard
was
he had
swing.
Sandpaper on his head.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought his stubble was going to be rougher than sandpaper.
So anyway, just making the point, the ball was swinging around. All right, my can't let it go is at a time when the current playing group and former players are disenfranchised, the Australian Cricketers Association has stopped doing its annual get-together for former players at each test match ground. So what would happen was that in the SCG, all the players that played test cricket were in Sydney could come there and it was a good get-together and this would be replicated around the country. And Todd Greenberg was asked about this on a radio show and he was saying that, attendances have sort of dwindled a bit and, they're trying to save money and they're trying to do things differently. And, they're sort of thinking of having a get-together, a sort of shield game instead and give them, they're instead giving them, I think, meal tickets and tickets. So, Doug Walters, instead of coming to have a nice lunch, here's a ticket, go and sit in the sun at the O'Reilly stand and get yourself a burger, queue up with all the rest. I mean, are they kidding? I mean, I just could not think of anything more silly. And if the numbers are dwindling, perfect. You need a smaller room, you need less food, less grog, so that's going to save some money. Like, why would you try alienate the former Test players.
Or maybe they're just getting in early on David Warner then, based on the Instagram thing we saw earlier.
Yeah, I just thought it was really silly. Yeah. And Paul and I, you know, we've all been to the Shield matches. It's not the same going to, you know, an empty SCG, or if they play them, or they do it out at Bankstown Oval. Hey, we're doing the reunion at Bankstown Oval. Come and sit in the War Brothers Pavilion and have the catering there with us, the egg mayo sandwich, which is fine. They're lovely sandwiches. But so I just, you know, Todd Greenberg did seem that they were going to look at it. But I just thought, God, you know, we've just gone through a summer where it seems like there's a sort of generational divide. Wouldn't you want to keep the former players invested in the team and keep them at the ground so maybe you can get past all this? So that's my can't let it go.
Maybe it needs to be.
Maybe they should give them all a bucket head or something when they come in and instead of a meal ticket. Wear a bucket on your head, Doug Walters.
One of my favourite examples of that was the reunion was the 77 Test match where they got everyone from everywhere. And you can see it on YouTube. Norman May did a documentary on it, basically, of them all arriving in it. It was very 1970s. They'd play the pilot's announcement. We'd like to welcome you all to Sydney at flight 746 and hope you enjoyed the flight from Adelaide. And on the trip, former South Australian cricketers in Melbourne for the centenary Test match. And there's all this sort of applause. And then Clary Grimmett walks out and Don Bradman walks out and brushes Norman. Morning, Norman. And keeps on going. And it was really cool. But I think mainly that was such an amazingly successful reunion because it was so rare. So maybe they need a bit of scarcity manners. Maybe they need to sort of say, rather than every season, we'll now do these once every three seasons and make it really proper.
Yeah, no, don't like that at all. Don't like that at all. It needs to be every year, tradition, get them all together. They get their suits on. They get a nice lunch at the ground, soak up the Test match. All righty. Well, I guess that's it for this edition of Cricket Unfiltered. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Where can people find you? Are you still on Twitter or have you dived
off? I'm still on Twitter. I'm at Lieb Cricket on Twitter, L-I-E-B Cricket. You can find me there. You can find me. If you start there, you can go to liebcricket.com is probably the other good starting point to go to track me down. You can find all kinds of stuff there from me.
And, Paul, where can the listeners connect with you?
On Twitter at @PaulDennett_ (2 N's, 2 T's) and starts with a D. And any stage soon, I'm intending to be back on TikTok. I've been sleeping on there for a while, but I've got some new content to come. So there'll be stuff from the 1920s or something like that. So, yeah, well, it really appeals to the younger generation.
Yep, the teenagers on TikTok can't wait. They're just yearning for it. Well, you can find me on Twitter at @AMenners. You've been listening to the longest running weekly cricket podcast in Australia. I will be back. We will be back next week after the Adelaide Test to wrap it up. But thanks for listening.
See ya.
Bye.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.